Bung bung.
Feeling tired? Fuck that. Perk up and level up with Bung Bung Coffee's delicious modern dark roast. Your favorite brewer's favorite brew. Bungbungcoffee.com.
Don't forget to go to claymcmathcomedy.com to book tickets for all of my shows. This week, we have the 7th at the Cooper's Ale House, Jepps Cross, the 9th in Kangaroo Island at the Ozone Hotel in Kingscote, and Fringe tickets are now on sale for Adelaide Fringe, Not Safe for Netflix. What a show title. The title alone should have you buying tickets, but if you want more selling points, you've got Jay Michael, who was tour support for Theo Vaughn and Sam Morril. You've got Justin Saw, who will bring comedy and chaos together, like, you know, like Thanos, I guess. He's got all the rings and he will make it all happen. And then you got me. I'm coast to coast doing comedy. You know, you'll see me in Perth one week, in Brisbane the next. I'm out here grinding, dude. If that's not enough for you, I mean, look, we're not going to win any awards because we're too raw for it. So if you want some raw, honest comedy, some things, you know, things that you think but wouldn't dare to say, that's what we're saying. Come to Not Safe for Netflix at the Adelaide Fringe through Fringe Ticks, or just go to claymcmathcomedy.com. You can get tickets through there. Let's start the show.
Welcome to the party. Best show on the internet. Ask anybody. You know it's easy money. Sit back, relax, get your headphones, everybody. Welcome to the party. Blackout in the booth. Every episode's a party. We go hard like Ricky Bobby. Tell a friend to tell a friend. This is Welcome to the Party.
Welcome to the party, Bung Bung. It's your man Claytron, aka the Big Boss Man, aka the Clumsy Jeweler, because I'm always dropping gems, aka the Milkman, because I always deliver, aka the PhD of podcasting, the Magnum PI of podcasting, the Captain, the Kendrick Lamar of podcasting, and I'm here with the rest of the TDE crew because this week I was humbled.
What humbled you, dude?
I had a gig on Thursday night. Okay. And it was the worst gig I've had in probably over 12 months. It was brutal. And I won't go too far into some of it, but basically I did this material, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, and it was like okay. It was brand new stuff. It was my first time doing this stuff on stage a few weeks ago. And it didn't bang. It got some laughs, whatever. I want my jokes to bang. So I'm tinkering with them. And because in Adelaide the scene's really small, you don't get up every night. Instead of like changing one thing and testing it out and then changing another thing, I changed 20 things and then went up. I didn't really know it off by heart. So like I didn't feel like I was able to perform it. I was just up there sort of like saying the words.
Yeah, okay.
And I just don't think the crowd bought into it. I don't think I wasn't confident in my memory of the material or that it was good even. And I just ate the most piping hot bag of dicks.
I mean, kind of comes with the territory though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Happens from time to time in that industry.
It's just hard because like I've just been doing like the road show. Mm. So just giving the gold every time and getting a gold response. And then you go and you work on new shit and this is what happens. And it's like, I should be working on new shit more. But yeah, man, it was like, I wanted to quit, honestly.
Just got to trust the process, man, and it's all part of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I was super humbled. I got off stage and went home immediately. I couldn't stick around. I just,
okay.
Yeah, came home, ate a full block of chocolate.
Yeah, essential.
Yeah, yeah.
Comfort food.
Yeah, I had to go crazy. But how's your week been?
Yeah, good. Another quiet one for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nothing out of the ordinary.
No, neither. And I wanted to just settle down after that gig. And then the next day, it was a beautiful day outside. Rach had a modeling gig, so she got home earlier than she usually does from like work. And we got blind, man. This was last night. I woke up dusty today, bro. So these actually, these are going down a treat. These are sort of recharging me. Hair of the dog.
Yeah, bit of a different one for us this week. Moving into the daytime slot.
Yeah, yeah. And doing a double header as well. Because I'm away next week. But yeah, maybe we should just jump straight into it.
Straight in. Let's do it.
Comedy, action, or horror? Will this movie win an Oscar? Set design, directing, acting like ting or costumes? This segment is Plays Reviews.
New on Netflix, The Killer. Have you got the plot for us?
Yep, bear with me. All right, so after a fateful near miss, an assassin battles his employers and himself on an international manhunt he insists isn't personal.
Yeah, and I like the wording of that, he insists. I think we'll sort of get back to that language in a moment. I had homemade chocolate chip cookies for this and Lindt hazelnut chocolate. I don't know what the name Fassbender derives from, but it sounded sort of Swedish, so I thought I'd get Swiss, so I got some Swiss chocolate.
Nice.
How did you go for snacks?
Hannah made a killer apple pie, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. If I knew ahead of time, one of the, I guess, details of the film was he listened to music a lot, similar to Baby Driver, and he listened to the Smiths all the time. Smith's Chips would have been a banger, but how are you supposed to know that ahead of time?
Yeah.
So the opening scene, and it went throughout the movie, but the opening scene was heavy on the voiceover.
I liked it.
You liked it?
Yeah.
I didn't. I thought it was just super corny, like, his sense of humor, the jokes he was making, I didn't feel like were that funny. They just were like, similar to my gig on Thursday night, he just was saying them.
Yeah, but that was pretty, it just tied in with his character because he wasn't a funny dude at all. So I wouldn't expect his jokes to be funny either.
There was some moments of humor in the film, not from the character per se, but I think more timing. And I'd say there was a section of the voiceover, but it was when he got in, it was the fight scene with the big like Samoan dude.
Yeah.
And he said something about like he repeated it throughout the film. Something about, I should have written it down. Nothing is personal. You're always in control. You know, you're prepared. And as he's saying this, the guy just pops out and decks the shit out of him. And it was like, you're not in control. Like that was
The irony at that moment.
So that was like kind of the humor and the timing from, I guess, the perspective of, who's the director?
David Fincher.
That's so annoying that I couldn't remember that. So he's the director of like Fight Club and all of those sort of like highly stylized films. So you could see that pretty early on with when he's doing like the yoga and he's like fully framed by the window that he's about to shoot out of and stuff like that. That's classic Fincher. I think this is similar to Killers of the Flower Moon in that it's been a few days since I watched it and some of the stuff has sort of marinated with me and I think I understand it more now than I did at the time. So specifically with the voiceover, talking so much about his attention to detail. He's listening to music, which is, I think, pretty strange when you have to be so focused when you're sniping. And like, what if someone
creeps up on you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that type of thing, I was like, that's funny how he's talking about, not fun. I didn't think it was funny at the time, but like he's talking about attention to detail. Obviously, there's a mistake made in that first job. After
mistakes made in every job he does.
Yeah, and that's interesting too because he's bragging about how
like meticulous he is.
Yeah. He'd be 1,000 for 1,000, except one guy had a heart attack and he didn't get the chance to kill him, so he doesn't count it. Like, he's never made a mistake before, and then that job he makes a mistake. Every job he makes a mistake through the whole film. I think, like you said before, the irony of it, I think that was like sort of the whole point.
Yeah, agreed.
And I wasn't in the moment, I wasn't thinking that. I was just like, this voiceover sucks. Like, he's so corny. He's not doing any of the stuff he's actually saying. It's like, that's the point, you dumb cunt. The, like, statistics that he was going on about in that opening monologue about every second on this earth, 1.8 people die. There's 4.2 babies born in that same second. So any life I take doesn't matter. And he, like, everything, he just, like, justifies his job. And basically talks about life not really being a big deal. There's no point. He's a full-on nihilist, which is another point I want to make. Is apparently Fincher wanted Brad Pitt to play Fassbender's role, and Brad Pitt turned it down because it was too nihilistic. But when you get to the crux of it, maybe Brad Pitt's not that smart, because when you get down to it, the nuts and bolts of it, the whole thing is an oxymoron. The whole movie, he's not actually a nihilist. He's got a girlfriend. The whole reason the whole movie is a revenge movie because his girlfriend gets attacked. If he didn't care about anyone or anything, one, why would he have a girlfriend? And two, why would he?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would he be vengeful? Mm. So he's actually not a nihilist. So to turn down the film because the guy's a nihilist doesn't make sense, unless you're a stupid idiot. Which I was when I watched it, because I completely thought he was a nihilist, but he's just making mistakes. But I don't think
I guess, like, once you found out how, like, distraught he was about his girlfriend, which was quite early on in the film.
Yeah.
I didn't even think twice about him being a nihilist. Because he cared too much about someone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never really went down that route of thinking. I didn't know about the whole, like, Brad Pitt.
Yeah. And the whole thing about, he kept repeating, like, this mantra, like, nothing is personal. The whole thing was personal. And, yeah, I was getting frustrated. I was getting frustrated in the moment, because I was like, this is personal. But, like,
I guess that's why I liked it. I liked the voiceover.
Yeah, and it's the point. It was the whole point of the movie, and I just wasn't, like, getting it. I was Brad Pitting myself the whole film. The first scene that I was just mentioning before with the yoga and stuff was in a abandoned office, which was a WeWork office, which I've got some questions. Was it taking a shot at WeWork? Like, WeWork wouldn't have paid for that, because I believe they've gone under.
To be honest, I don't even know what the WeWork organization is and what they do.
So WeWork is basically Airbnb for offices.
Right.
Because of the whole COVID and people now work from home and people don't need office space as much, it's just a non-factor. And so I may be wrong, but I believe WeWork may have gone under. And that's why it was vacant.
Just looking this up now.
Yeah, because I was wondering why they only showed the logo of WeWork backwards through the opposite side of the door. And I was like, sure, like, it can't have been an advertising opportunity, because to the best of my knowledge, they're not a business anymore. And this is a new film. So I was just wondering if they were, like, taking a shot. Was that like supposed to be part of the, like, nothing matters idea of the opening monologue that Fassbender's character was? Do we ever find out his name?
I can't recall it. I watched it last night as well. I can't.
I don't know if we find out his name, but the most annoying thing,
bloody 50 names throughout the film, man.
And they were all like sitcom characters.
George Jefferson.
Yeah. And like Sam Malone,
What's Sam Malone from?
He's what's the guy's name that plays Becker? Yeah, well, it's his character from Cheers is Sam Malone.
Right.
And once I saw Sam Malone, that took me out.
Ted Danson.
Once I saw Sam Malone, I was like, well, this guy's supposed to be like completely nondescript. People aren't supposed to remember him. And it's like, if anyone's watched TV before, every one of his aliases is a freaking TV character. Like, it's so easy to catch him, kind of.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that. I didn't realize they were all like famous names.
Yeah, there was a few that I didn't recognize, but like Howard Cunningham is Richie Cunningham's dad from Happy Days, and that was one of his things. Maybe that was the point. It was just another sort of like dumb mistake, like this Mr. Meticulous is using these recognizable names.
Yeah, and even when he was like talking to all these clerks and like receptionists and whatnot, his whole thing was trying to be like as like least memorable as possible.
Yeah.
But I thought by him being a mute, like, wouldn't these people remember it later in the day, be like, that guy was weird?
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was doing too much to not be noticed that would then make him noticeable.
I honestly think that it would be less memorable to be a chatty Cathy and just like be like, oh, how's your day been? Like, oh God, I'm running late. I got stuck in the cab. I didn't have any money. The guy wouldn't let me out. And just like do this stupid story that's super memorable. People wouldn't even suspect you.
Yeah.
And he's just like not speaking back to people, which is one of my biggest gripes in film, is like people on the phone. And when the phone call finishes, there's no goodbye or anything. It's just like, they just hang up.
Just click.
And he was doing that in like just in conversation, which people again do, like a lot of like Suits. If you ever watch Suits, they'll go and make a point and be like some like grand statement. And they'll just be like, well, that's why I never lose. I always win. And they just walk away. And it's like, I've never actually been in a situation where someone's done that.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild way to end a convo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just the old walk off.
Yeah, this guy just wouldn't even respond to people.
Yeah, yeah, that part got me because I was like, you're doing too much not to be noticed, and that is going to make you noticeable.
Yeah, but yeah.
Got away with it.
Yeah, but the WeWork thing, I'm wondering if there's any legalities behind that. If a business has gone under, or I guess you're probably allowed to show branding in stuff, even if you haven't been paid. I guess it's just free marketing, I suppose. Like you can wear a Nike jumper without contacting Nike, right?
Yeah. I'd assume so. Or like the amount of times you're watching a movie and there might be like a can of Coke at a restaurant in the distance. Like,
yeah. But most of the time they're getting bread for it.
Yeah.
But I was just like, there's no way. I'm almost certain WeWork's not around anymore.
No, I've just looked up. They've the office sharing company WeWork has filed for bankruptcy. And this article was from 7th November this year.
Yeah. So, okay. But this would have been made prior to that. But maybe the writing was on the wall or...
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just interesting that like in real life, we've moved in that direction of being based from home. And it's just such a difficult thing to wrap your head around. Like, one, there's no line between your work and your home, which was a tough thing to sort of navigate during COVID. Like, your work day bled into your life. Like, a lot of people worked longer hours and stuff during COVID, like, just because they had their equipment at home and they didn't have to, like, oh shit, I've got to beat traffic or whatever. They didn't have to leave or whatever. So people would just like work longer. So that's like one unhealthy thing about that world, this world. And people meet friends, wives, mentors in the office. And where's that opportunity now? Like, you're not going to find a mentor in a Skype meeting. You're not going to...
No, it's not the same.
You're not going to like... get to a point with somebody where you're like, God, like I want to be like that person.
Especially if you didn't have that pre-existing relationship.
Yeah. It's pretty hard like to not see the way someone's work. Like if you're not seeing the way someone's working and presenting themselves like over the course of time, you're just seeing them in Skype meetings. Yeah, that you're not going to aspire to be like them, or you're not going to get the opportunity to really see how someone acts. Like in the lunchroom, you're only going to see them professionally, so you're not going to fall in love at work or make true friendships over the internet.
Yeah.
I guess there's probably exceptions to that rule, but it's pretty hard for those, like, yeah, major relationships can be made in the office, I think. Yeah, so sorry, I got pretty stuck on WeWork just then. Civilians in Crosshairs was an early thing that I noticed during his, like, what I felt like was a nihilistic speech, and just like the fragility of life, and anyone could get it at any time. Like, and he just had like this kind of God complex sitting up in the window waiting for his mark to arrive. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really know where I was going with that. I think it was just adding to the stuff that he was saying. I guess, yeah, I didn't love the voiceover initially. Now, yeah, looking back, I think I enjoy it more. But they did a good job of like sort of capturing visually the stuff he was saying, even though he was just in one location.
Yeah, I think so. It was a long scene, but I thought it was pretty crucial to like setting up the rest of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hannah was complaining that it was too long of a scene, but at the time I thought it was important. And then at the end of the film, I doubled down on that. I thought it was important to show like the meticulousness and the lengths that this guy went to and how prepared he thought he was.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not really articulating this all that well, but
I think it was, looking back, probably the most important scene in the film. And I like a long scene. If you can, I mean, maybe I don't know how many people have the same opinion as Hannah on that scene. Maybe she sounds like she got a bit bored of it, a bit over it. But I think, in my opinion, they carried it well. They maintained my attention. There was suspense with like the delivery guy coming in, and he thought he was going to have to kill like a witness. It's not really a huge spoiler. He didn't end up having to because he didn't get seen. But yeah, like I thought that was a huge story arc. It was important for the base of the rest of the film, and the rest of the film was quite like in and out for the rest of the scenes.
I didn't like the cut scenes where they went from like city to city. Just like telling us what chapter it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. Not in that film anyway.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of it because I think it's lazy.
Yeah. Like maybe just location,
mm-hmm.
if you want to tell me that, but don't tell me like what chapter this is and what part of the story it is. I didn't like
that. I think it in some, I can't think of an example right now. I think it works as a tool sometimes, but it added nothing to this film doing that. Obviously, he was traveling around. He needed to escape. He couldn't be found by authorities, so he had to get out. So I guess we have to find out where he is, but like show us a skyline, you know?
Mm, yeah.
If you go on to New York, like we see the Empire State Building, we know where you are. We see the big pointy thing in Paris. The Eiffel Tower, we know where you are, you know? Yeah. And they just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess like the name of the place, I didn't mind that because, I don't know, if someone flies into the Dominican Republic, it might not be that noticeable to everyone by just giving them a skyline. So if you say where that is, that's fine, but it was just more so like the chapter at the start, then it was the name of the place, and then they were talking about like what part of the story this is.
Yeah.
Like the retreat was the Dominican Republic tag at the end of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was like obvious that was
his residence. Yeah, like, he just failed an assassination. I think he's going to try and retreat.
Yeah.
He didn't need to tell me that was happening.
Yeah. I don't.
Small little nitpicky thing, but I don't know. Just didn't like it.
I don't know why they did that. What did you think of, I guess the next major point would have been the fight scene with the big Floridian.
I like that.
You like that scene?
I thought that was a cool fight scene.
Yeah. I think that's where my score over the week has probably increased, was that scene sort of put together the humor, the irony of the whole thing for me. Yeah. I mean, it could have been more creative, maybe.
The way it was filmed.
Or just like the stunts and the kill itself. It was just kind of, it was pretty bland in the end, I thought.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. Some of those punches he took to the head, I just couldn't believe he was still standing. Like, that was pretty nuts. Because he was kind of jacked, but he wasn't the biggest dude by any means.
And he was like kind of old jacked. Yeah. Like, yeah. He didn't look like he could have been taking those hits from that guy. He was massive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we're just to expect that he's got an iron jaw because he's an assassin.
Yeah, I guess so. That bit, yeah, I didn't really like that aspect of it, but the action scene of the fire I thought was cool. I thought that was all pretty well put together.
Yeah.
It just wasn't that believable that he could keep getting up after all these hits.
Yeah. And the other guy's like bleeding out, just walking around the house. Yeah. Or limping, I suppose. But and then Tilda Swinton in the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't care how good of an assassin you are or whatever. I just feel like there would be more panic when you know you're about to die. When he pulled up and took her gun away and sat down and she was like, I'm going to die now. Get me a whiskey. I was just like, come on.
I was a bit lost on that part. How did she tie into it?
She and the big Floridian guy were the two that...
Oh, okay.
So I guess there was like an insurance clause in the job that he failed.
Yeah.
Where if he failed or didn't get the job done, they would be activated and go and kill his girlfriend as a response to that.
See, I thought it was just the Floridian guy and like...
No, so it was both of them. Right. Yeah. Okay. So he was trying to track them both down. So when he kidnapped his contact's assistant or whatever, he got both the names from her.
Two contact details. Yeah.
And yeah, I liked that. Obviously, he couldn't leave witnesses, but there was a point where I believed that he was going to let the assistant survive. Mm. But then, just the cold-hearted kill.
Well, she knew that she wasn't going to survive, so she just asked for it to be a certain way.
Oh,
like she said, I can't go missing. My children need my life insurance.
Okay, so I thought she just meant in that moment.
Nah, she knew she wasn't getting out of that. Okay. She's just like, don't just make me disappear. Like, make it look like I was, like, leave me here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I thought she just meant in that moment, like, don't just chuck me in the bin like you're going to with the other guy. And then when he took her with him and she was like, I've got what you need. Like, if you know you're going to, like, why give it to him? I thought that maybe she was just like.
I guess at that point, if you don't give it to him, then you've already witnessed enough. You do just go missing and your kids don't get your life insurance.
Right. So she thought, I'll give you what you need and then you'll kill me in a way that my family just thinks is an accident and at least they've got some type of closure.
I think it was more like the financial aspect.
Oh, the life insurance.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was the main driver of that. Just
but
kill me in a way that police find me and life insurance just gets processed as it should.
Okay.
Because for missing people, there must be some clause in life insurance that it doesn't get paid out if someone just vanishes.
Oh, no, it wouldn't because there needs to be some sort of clarification. They can't have just like got on a plane.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that makes more sense. I thought there was like, yeah, the way I saw it was she was giving him what he wanted and she had like an expectation that I might survive this. And then he still was like, I'm not leaving you. And so I was like, yeah, I just liked that even though he clearly had a conscience, he wasn't as nihilistic as I at first thought. He was like, I have to take you out. And he did it. Who else? Oh, the taxi driver, you know, obviously. He thought he was going to maybe talk himself out of it and he just popped him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you have to.
You have to.
Yeah. Yeah, so Tilda Swinton, he goes, meets with her, and we think, well, we know he's gonna kill her. But she, yeah, I just don't think, even if you're the coldest assassin ever, I still think you fear death. I don't think you just sit there and you're like, I'll have my last whiskey here and... Like
what could she have done though? He had the gun cocked under the table.
Could have ran.
Would have shot it.
He couldn't in that space. That's why he had to take her away, right? Or what, you've got to kill like 30 people that witness it?
I mean, if you got that many passports lined up.
It wasn't a John Wick film. It was more realistic than that. Like the world that we were in. I think she could have done more. And she tried to trick him at the end with a broken heel and she had a knife. And that was like his correction, I guess, in like all the mistakes that he made along the way. The trust nobody. He didn't try to help her up. He just popped her and then he saw after that she had a knife. I don't know. I hope that's not a spoiler. I think like in a movie like this, you know who's going to win, right? So I don't think it's a major spoiler that he comes out on top. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't have much more to say about it. Do you?
No, I don't think so, man. You touched on the main sort of points. Like, even after I watched it, I was thinking to myself, like, I'm not going to have any talking points for this film.
Yeah.
It's
pretty basic.
Just my last note was, cunt keeps fucking up his own plans.
Yeah.
That's my summary of the film.
Yeah, he did. It was like, I tried to make it be like something meets something, but all I could really think of was like Taken meets Baby Driver, because like it was like heavily based on music for some reason, and I don't know, he was listening to the Smiths. Were we supposed to be like, whoa, what a cool dude? Or I don't really understand what the relevance of the Smiths was, other than like, wow, this assassin listens to the Smiths. How cool is he? I don't know.
Is that just another like play on irony in the film? I don't know in what way, but just like you wouldn't expect a killer to be listening to that.
Yeah, true. And like maybe he should have just been like John Smith as well, not freaking fucking, I don't know, what was his name? Sam Malone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what'd you give it?
I gave this a 6.5.
6.5. What'd you give it? I gave it a 7. Yeah, in the end. I think I was down at a 6 earlier this week and let it marinate and hit it with a 7.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
All right, you guys know what it is. Welcome to the potty on everything. Buy tickets to all my shows, claymcmathcomedy.com. Buy Bung Bung Coffee at bungbungcoffee.com. Tell a friend to tell a friend. If you tell your friends and you show us through the DMs how you have told your friends, you are eligible for entry. You're automatically entered into the draw to win free Welcome to the Potty merch every month. As many times you share, as many entries to the draw as you get. I hope that made sense. Just tell a friend about the show. Let's grow this bitch. Love you guys. Don't forget to love yourselves. And as always, bung bung.